Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the most listened to NXT podcast in all of wrestling podcast history. Welcome to Next Level.
Let's continue our party, everybody, by just clapping our hands.
All right, guys, welcome to the Next Level Wrestling Podcast. This is your host, the Andrew Bello, the babyface assassin, the mayor of kayfabe, the king of the cruiserweight content on our YouTube page. I have many a moniker, many more to come, but this is not about me. This is about wrestling, and I happen to be listening to another wrestling podcast about, it happened to be the Cheap Heat podcast from ESPN, hosted by Peter Rosenberg, and he's on WWE now, and he's got a little stroke, so he managed to get Triple H in for an interview, and there was a couple things that I got from the interview that I kind of wanted to discuss, and because, you know, this is NXT, and Triple H is sort of, you know, dear old dad for the NXT kind of coverage. One thing that came across to me is Rosenberg asks Triple H about whether or not we'll ever see Kurt Angle in the ring in WWE. And Triple H made it sort of, you know, pretty clear, I guess, that he stated to Kurt Angle on multiple occasions that if he wants to get into the ring, he's going to need to kind of come back and prove himself worthy, I guess, essentially make sure that he's in a good mental state. And then ultimately, he also mentions that he's going to have to, obviously, live up to a certain medical protocol that they have. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I mean, I know Kurt Angle's had his issues in the past. He, you know, obviously he left the company not on the greatest of terms. He was gone for a long time. He's got, you know, documented substance abuse issues. He's come back from them, though, from most people's knowledge of it, at least at this point, for some time now. And to say, like, Kurt Angle's gotta, you know, prove himself, but then they supposedly have a contract on the table for the Hardys, according to Pro Wrestling Sheet's Ryan Satin, who's generally pretty good as far as I'm concerned. He's one of the dirt sheets that I will put a little bit of faith into at times. And, you know, that's going to make for an interesting dynamic, and I'm pretty sure for some reason Kurt Angle's being punished to a degree for leaving and for being almost as good as he was away from the company. Like, if you suck and you leave the company and you have to come crawling back, like, that's fine. Like, he really doesn't need to, but it just makes sense for everybody involved to just have Kurt Angle come back, be in the Hall of Fame, maybe get a one-off feud with somebody. But yeah, so that was the thing with Triple H there. And then also, there was a series of questions that sort of led me to believe that maybe Triple H isn't this all-encompassing, omniscient force in the back. Because, you know, there's, to a degree, like, I mean, I think we all think that Triple H is just in on every storyline and all sorts of stuff like that. I think right now, he's focused on his feud with Seth Rollins, and he's focused on NXT and TakeOver Orlando and the guys or ladies that are going to be moving up to the main roster that him and Shawn Michaels in all likelihood are working with to put that final coat of paint, that little bit of polish on them before they get back up to the main roster, or they start up on the main roster rather. And he's focused on a lot of things probably on the business end. And he's also obviously, you know, not for nothing, everyone, you know, a lot of people do, but he's got a family, and I'm sure that's a fairly complicated situation with Steph and the kids and, you know, the crazy father-in-law and psychotic brother-in-law, realistically. I mean, Shane McMahon's a fucking crazy man. So Triple H, it's got an interesting life. But yeah, he's sort of the dad of NXT, so I wanted to talk about that a little, because we don't really get to hear a lot about Triple H's backstage kind of point of views on things, and it was points of view, rather, on things. And it was kind of interesting. Like, he was talking about Braun Strowman, and it sounded like he really doesn't know what Braun Strowman's doing. Now, again, this could all be a work, and he's a fairly good actor. He could be convincing when he wants to be. And that, you know, that seemed weird to me. Maybe, I mean, in what world is Braun Strowman not involved in that Roman Reigns Undertaker match in some capacity? Like, maybe they... I think realistically the best way to end that match is to have Roman Reigns come really close to beating The Undertaker, and then Braun Strowman comes out and stops him somehow. Like, it's Undertaker gets the win, but Roman Reigns looked like he was going to win, and Braun Strowman looks like a douche, and you can build a lot of heat around all of that. And yeah, I know it's The Undertaker's one match a year or something or other, and that you don't want to waste it on like a DQ finish or something like that, but at this point, Braun deserves more than the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and frankly, he deserves more than to be the third wheel in this feud, which is sort of bullshit. I think he's been one of the best built characters on the show, and he deserves to have a much more prominent role on the WrestleMania card. He could be putting over some real young babyface. They could have continued the Sami Zayn thing all the way to WrestleMania, and it would have been... Like, Sami Zayn overcoming and beating Braun Strowman right now would be awesome. People would just go nuts for it. So, you know, I think they dropped the ball there, and they're continuing to do so because it doesn't look like he's going to have anything else to do other than either, like I said, the Battle Royal or being the third wheel in this feud or both, which still doesn't really add up to much. So, I mean, at the end of the day, the moral of this story was that Triple H doesn't really necessarily know everything that's going on backstage, maybe creatively, like the way a lot of people think he does, but, you know, Vince is ultimately overriding everybody at the end of the day anyway, so even if Triple H can sneak in some awesome shit from time to time or try to, you know, that's ultimately still got to get through the filter of Vince and maybe even Steph to some degree, depending on what it is, I guess. And there was one sort of encouraging thing about the interview is that he was talking about what he preaches to the people in NXT is like, the way that we're making this, and if we make this the way we want wrestling to be, what this is going to be what wrestling is in 5 years. And that's encouraging, because if you love NXT like I love NXT, that's great. If we can get just a slightly bigger scale, because realistically, TakeOver's not all that... They do TakeOvers in the same building as they do the pay-per-view, so it's something that, you know, it's on the same scale when it wants to be or when it needs to be. If they could do that, NXT... level wrestling and storytelling on the big stage, I think we'd all be happy about it, because we, you know, you're listening to an NXT podcast, I'm sure you like NXT, like, you know, about as much as I do, let's call it that. And so other than that, what I really wanted to talk about as well is the tag team match on SmackDown last night. If you don't want spoilers, fast forward 2 or 3 minutes, because I'm going to go off right about now. The Usos win the title, and that's kind of crazy. I guess that puts Alpha in the chase, which is good, but it was very sudden, and the tag team division hadn't even been featured on SmackDown in basically like 3 weeks. So it seemed so random and out of nowhere, but the Usos are good heels, and I'm appreciating the in-ring work. That match was really good. I would go back and watch it. And I guess, like I said, we'll get the rematch at WrestleMania and Alpha will win it back. And then hopefully we get the revival coming up shortly after that. But I was thinking about just kind of random, you know, good tag team wrestling is a beautiful thing. And tag team wrestling is such that you have teams like the Usos and American Alpha and the Revival that are like the traditional, like, we're a tag team. That's basically who we are. Scott Dawson is one half of the Revival. And, you know, it's not necessarily like two big names that came together. But some of my favorite tag teams are people like that. Like people that are singles competitors. Obviously, like the Sheamus and Cesaro thing that we have going on right now. Not one of my favorites, but it's an interesting dynamic. And it makes for good stories sometimes. And some of my favorites that I kind of wanted to just go over, like the first for me was Owen Hart and Yokozuna. even as a kid, I loved them. Even they were heels and they were mean, but I loved the dynamic of Yokozuna having like a smaller, faster, scrappier kind of guy that can you know, do a lot of the work necessarily, but then like when you need the muscle, you got Yokozuna. So that's a good thing to have. And it was a great dynamic for me. Like, even as a kid, I appreciated it. It was like one of the first sort of, not necessarily strange bedfellows, but I guess odd couplings that I can remember. And then, you know, obviously, as I got older and was watching wrestling, you see a lot of those kind of deals. Kane was in like 9 of them. Like, Kane with Hurricane, Kane with X-Pac, Kane with RVD, Kane with Daniel Bryan. Like, Team Hell No is one of my favorite tag teams of all time. And I was thinking about it the other day. Like, there's a lot of really great tag teams, and it depends really on what you like about tag team wrestling. The Road Warriors, the Demolition, you know, all the way up to New Day, Enzo, not Enzo and Cass, but, you know, like, just New Day, The Revival, like, these types of Young Bucks, like, you know, there's just so many different forms of tag team wrestling. And, like, Jericho, like, all these kinds of, like, the two-man power trip, the Rocket Sock connection, all the odd couplings and possibilities that you have with tag team wrestling. And it was sort of indicative, the one thing to kind of wrap this all up here, I thought, is that at the end of the day, that match with the Usos and American Alpha was so good that it didn't need a bunch of build. Good tag team wrestling tells the story in the ring. And good wrestling does that, but with like a high profile, like heavyweight one-on-one feud, you gotta really like kind of build this, that, the other thing. Because at the end of the day, you could have a match like Brock and Goldberg where it's over in 90 seconds. And then like people are all pissed about it. They weren't at least taken on a ride. At the end of the day, you can appreciate what happened over the course of the weeks that led up to it. But with a good tag team match, it could just be like, you know, Team A comes out, Team B comes out. Team A identifies themselves as bad guys. Team B identifies themselves henceforth as good guys. And they can tell a full story between the four of them and the ref and all the shenanigans that you could pull out. Like, the Revival is so good at all that stuff. And you could tell just such a great story if you have 10 minutes in a tag team match that it doesn't even need to have any sort of elaborate buildup. It's pretty cut and dry. Good versus evil. Strategy, athleticism, experience, shystiness, all in play. And let's see who comes out on top here. And, you know, the Usos and the American Alpha did that. And the Revival and the Young Bucks and the Broken Hardys, they all do that in such a special way that they've been able to do it for a long time and make out, well, the Hardys and, you know, the Young Bucks have, but, you know, they've been able to do it for a long time and make a whole lot of money doing it without being single stars necessarily. Well, the Hardys, they were. Jeff Hardy's not my favorite. And I said it. Jeff Hardy's not my favorite. But I guess I don't want to end off the first half of the show doing it, but yeah, whatever, we're going to do it. This is the Next Level Wrestling Podcast. This is the Wrestling World Podcast Network. I am your host, The Andrew Bello. Find me on Twitter at WWPNBELLO. That's at WWPNBELLO. And yeah, let's get into the NXT. Alright guys, so I don't know if everybody else gets these same commercials when you start up an episode of NXT, but I got the Rusev and Lana Snickers commercial. Like, if you haven't seen it yet, go find it, because it's hysterical looking. Like, it just, the whole thing is so funny. And there are a couple, I guess, Snickers commercials out, because I saw one with Bailey as well, which is worth a YouTube, I guess, if that's even possible, or watch a bunch of shows on the network and eventually you'll see them. That was the first thing I saw as soon as I queued up the episode, so that was awesome. Episode 383 of NXT. We start off with a match between Cien Almas and Oney Lorcan. This match man, these guys, they did it again. I love these two together. I don't know if it's just me. If it's just me, let me know. Please, you guys know. I'll plug myself several times before the end of the show. Yeah, it sounds bad. Anyway, Almas, this whole thing with Almas is great. He's just full Los Ingobernables. And here's my thing with Los Ingobernables. I love Los Ingobernables de Japón. And I think I got it right. And so I'm a fan of them. I love Naito. I love, you know, Bushi and Hiroshima and Evil and, you know, that whole thing. I love it all. But I know it has its roots in CMLL and Lucha Libre, and I never saw that. So I know La Sombra is CN Almas or Andrade Almas, and that he was one of the founding members of Los Ingobernables, and that it's now like this global thing, and he's sort of floundering in NXT, but he's in NXT now doing the gimmick, and it's gold. Like, he's a great heel right now. He's getting over almost to a degree. He's so cocky and he's so awesome. It's, you know, it's a good look for him, and I love it. Like, just because, like I said, I like the Los Ingobernables de Japón stuff, and basically, like, I'm assuming now at this point that maybe Naito ripped all that stuff off of him, but he is doing the same shit that Naito did or does in New Japan right now, and I love, you know, like I said, I like all that stuff, so I'm liking it here. It's a good look. And we get, you know, a pretty good match out of these two, like I said. I'm not going to go ahead and break it down, but we get some pretty good athleticism, and ultimately the match breaks down to, well, I will say this, it's like strong style, this match, sort of, in a way. All these guys, or both of these guys, hit really hard and bring an authenticity to this. It's sort of cool that they have this chemistry, and it feels like a fight. Anyway, we get Almas going over with a double knee to the corner and a trap, you know, arm trap DDT or hammerlock DDT, as Nigel calls it. Like I said, these guys have good chemistry. That's pretty much it. All you need to know, I guess, as far as these two are concerned, because we find out after we get a Aleister Black vignette a little later on in the show, we later find out, even after that, that Aleister Black is going to be making his NXT debut at TakeOver Orlando, and his opponent is going to be Andrade Cien Almas. So that's going to be a really good match. I think these two should put on a show. I think their styles are going to mesh well. Like I said, Almas brings that authenticity, and Lorcan does too, which is why those two work well together. But in this match, like, Aleister Black's like a legit kickboxer. He can actually go out there and kick your head off. And Almas has sort of an MMA kind of style about him. He's got, if nothing else, vicious looking strikes in a working sense, you know, in a WWE pro wrestling sense. It like I said, it sort of feels New Japanish. It's very strong style to me. And these two should work really well together. And I'm assuming Black's going to end up murdering him at the end. But Almas built up, you know, pretty good heat as a heel. And, you know, Aleister Black's not necessarily a babyface. He's not really a face at all. He's not really a heel at all. It's going to be interesting to see how they book him and if they could keep him true to that. But it looks like, you know, when you put him up against Almas, that they're going to try and push him as his face, as this tweener. And maybe that's something that they should be doing. But at the same time, I don't know that they're going to be able to execute it well, because they're WWE and they don't do things right all the time. One thing they most definitely got right was this Asuka segment. So Asuka is facing a jobber of no note. I did not get her name, didn't even bother. She did sell really well for Asuka, despite the fact that she took a lot of damage here, and she didn't die. So there's that. But she ends up getting beat up pretty early, slaps Asuka. Big mistake. Asuka kicks her head off, goes for a pin, and then pulls her up before three, because she's mean, I guess. And, you know, she's going to be slightly heelish Asuka this time around. And this segment was awesome. Asuka ends it with basically saying that she is, you know, she screams a bunch of stuff in Japanese, and then says, no eclipse. So that's her strategy. She's going to try to avoid getting hit with that eclipse.
makes sense to me. I would recommend it. And it's going to be a hell of a match. These two women have been built well individually. Obviously, Asuka is undefeated and has been so for like over 500 days. And Ember Moon is been kept away from Asuka for a while as they built her up and gave her some big wins. And yeah, it's going to be a hell of a match. And I think we're going to, we're going to obviously do a prediction show here next week. And we'll see what happens, but I think of all the ones that it's pretty obvious what's going to happen here. I think Ember Moon's going to take this title, and Asuka's going up to the main roster. She's already torn with SmackDown, from what I could tell or for what I've read, and she was at that MSG house show apparently, and like damn near tore the house down. So there was one recently, and it Asuka's ready, and at this point, I'd like to see her not lose the belt. Honestly, I'd like to see her hold it and continue to be undefeated and just continue that and just go with she's debuting and after being undefeated 550 days in NXT, I think that would be a good credential to walk in the door with, in addition to the fact that she's gonna murder people. But I'm ready for Asuka to be a cruiserweight just altogether. I'm ready. Asuka kicking the shit out of Noam Dar every week, like, sign me up, take my money. I think at this point she's just too dominant for me to even with Nia Jax. Like, I could see Asuka in real life in a real fight between those two, just chopping her down real quick, and that would be the end of that. Like, Asuka's a machine, and it's gonna be really cool when somebody dethrones her. And it looks, like I said, all signs are pointing to that being Ember Moon right now.
But we get a series of vignettes from all the tag teams, from DIY, telling their story, essentially from the whole beginning of their time in WWE to now, and that DIY is a movement, and they're gonna, go on to win, yada yada. It was a good promo. It was lengthy. It kept me interested. They managed to kind of go back and forth as they were telling the story, and they have good chemistry, and I'm really high on Gargano. I think I've probably ranted about him on the show more than enough times, but if not, I'll do it again real quick. I just think he's just like the perfect underdog babyface. As much as everyone loves Zayn and love Daniel Bryan, there's something about Johnny Wrestling that just makes you like, he's Rudy, that's I think that's the best way of putting it. It's something about it, even though he's very talented and like he deserves to be there. It has nothing to do with this like weird sort of notion of that like he's trying really hard, so we'll give him it anyway. No, he's every bit as good as anyone else realistically at selling and at being that, that guy that gets beaten down before he gets the hot tag to his tag team partner to ultimately win and be a part of a good to great tag team as DIY is. And I don't know, this was kind of cool. And then the Revival did the same thing a little later on. They tell their story. They're the greatest tag team of all time. They're better than the Rock and Roll Express and all the other tag teams that they listed. It's really funny. They're so delusional. It's awesome. And the Revival's great. DIY is great. Altus and Pain. That's going to be I'm still calling it best match of WrestleMania weekend. And I'm so confident that's going to be a tremendous match. I cannot wait for it. I'm more excited for that than WrestleMania as of right now. Anyway, we'll see if they can sway me. I'll give them time. But apparently we're getting a three-way match next week between Akam, Johnny Gargano, and Dash Wilder. And that's going to be interesting. I think that's good booking. I like the whole idea there. We're going to have a triple threat tag team match. Let's take them all out of their element a little bit. I guess Gargano gets the advantage as probably the best singles wrestler by a significant margin. But obviously he's also the smallest, and he's in a triple threat with two bigger guys and three other guys outside the ring, and it's going to make for some good stuff. Like, I think that'll be a really good match. And speaking of tag teams, before we move on too far, because there wasn't really a whole lot going on in this episode. I'm gonna pretty much take a quick break right after this, but like I said, speaking of tag teams, we get a Heavy Machinery vignette, and I think I've spoken about Heavy Machinery in the last couple weeks, but I'm really happy that they're pushing this. I think this is gonna be cool. I think with the Revival going up, and maybe even the Authors of Pain or DIY or both going up at some point down the road or in the near future, you know, in the immediate future. Who knows? All three of them could go up there already, and that's going to be a great match, like I said. I'm so excited for that match. I'm sorry. But, yeah, Heavy Machinery is a nice way to slide a tag team in there, and they got a good gimmick. They work pretty well. I wasn't really, like, expecting much out of Tucker Knight and Otis Blagojevich or whatever his name is. I'm going to figure it out eventually, but right now he hasn't really done anything. So I'm not even going to bother. That's it. You got to do something. You want me to learn your name, or have an easy name that makes that easy as well. But yeah, there's some cool stuff going on with the tag team division in NXT. That's for damn sure. We don't always get that kind of stuff, you know, on the main roster. As a matter of fact, this is the best tag team division in probably wrestling right now. And it's just those three teams on top. And that's apparently all you need when you got the Rocks, Paper, Scissors booking of teams like the Hardys and the Dudleys and Edge and Christian, or DIY, Authors of Pain, and the Revival. You can do what you want when you want to do it, and it's going to work because all three teams are fitting their roles perfectly, filling their roles perfectly, rather. Playing their roles, if you will. If you will, baby. And, yeah, so like I said, we're going to go ahead and take a break. And we'll come back with the back half of this episode, which wasn't really a whole lot, unfortunately. I'm glad I went with a lengthy intro, and, you know, I'll probably rant on at the end of the show about something else completely nonsensical but somewhat wrestling-related, at a minimum. All right, here's the break. Do you want to start a war? Alright, so like I was saying, we don't get a whole lot of crazy stuff going on in the back half of this episode. At least nothing insanely of note. There was like a really, really long video package about Bobby Roode and Shinsuke Nakamura. And as much as I love that match, and as much as I love those guys, and I love this rivalry, it was like a 6-week feud, maybe? 5? 4? It wasn't like this lengthy thing. This is the magic of WWE video production. It's like the Kevin Owens and Goldberg video package that they did that was insanely, like, infinitely better than the actual match itself. The video package was amazing. The match sucked. It sucked. So there's really no two ways about that. And so they had that really long video package, like I said, about the Nakamura and Bobby Roode rivalry and rematch that's going to be happening. I'm looking so forward to that match. The Takeover Orlando is stacked right now. Like, I'm really, really stoked for Takeover Orlando. WrestleMania's got its hands full, and it's going to be a tough act to follow. And NXT no longer on Friday. I've just put this all together now. It's going to be on the Saturday right before WrestleMania. So that's, I feel like that puts the pressure on a little bit more. And yeah, I know WrestleMania's got all the budget and all the hoopla, and it's going to outshine it on the grand scheme of things, but the in-ring performers are going to be very much aware of what's happening over in, you know, on NXT, on TakeOver, and they're going to want to make sure that they have the best wrestling show that weekend. And, you know, it's WrestleMania, so they have the advantage. TakeOver's got the card right now. It's going to be pretty cool. We get a video package, or not a video package, I guess it's an interview with Cassius Ohno from the week prior, after he loses to Bobby Roode in the NXT Championship match last week. And he, you know, gives the typical, it's a tough loss, and he's kind of trying to, you know, waste time, basically, until the Drifter comes drifting in, playing a sad song for Cassius Ohno, and Ohno, you know, what are you doing here? And like, I'm just trying to be, and Drifter's singing about him, and they, you know, now they got some sort of qualm all of a sudden. And the Drifter tells Cassius Ohno that he doesn't belong there. And Chris Hero says, yeah, maybe I don't belong. Well, Cassius Ohno says, maybe I don't belong here. Maybe you don't belong here. Let's find out next week, or I guess at TakeOver, a loser leaves NXT match, the outcome of which, that I hope for anyway, is going to be very different than what you might think. I hope the Drifter wins this match. I hope Elias Sampson wins this match. I love the idea of them just bringing in Ono for a job spot to Rude, a job spot to Sampson, and then being banished from NXT forever again. I think that just, oh my god, that'd be so great. That he would come in and do something like that. That's a great gimmick for Elias Sampson. If they bring in like these indie guys for like one off, like beloved indie guys for one off contracts, and Elias Sampson keeps beating them in loser leaves NXT town matches, all that stuff would be cool. And I guess Ono can always just go right up to the main roster realistically if they wanted to do something like that as well. And Sampson, oh man, that's good heat. Sampson banishing Cassius Ohno from NXT again, even though we just got him back. Oh, that would be also wonderful. So I'm very intrigued to see what happens there. I assume, like I said, that's got to be a takeover match. I can't, you know, they shouldn't be giving that away next week on NXT. I assume next week's NXT is going to be a 45-minute long contract signing between Samoa Joe and between Nakamura and Bobby Roode. Did I say Samoa Joe before too? I don't know. I got wrestling on the brain, but our main event for this week is the six-man tag between the upper mid-card babyfaces and Sanity, and it's pretty much everything you expect it to be, an absolute clusterfuck. We get, obviously, Nikki Cross trying to get involved so that they can manipulate the numbers game, being 4-on-3. It turns into an all-in-out, like an out-and-out melee. Everybody looks pretty, you know, I guess everyone looks like this whole thing is going to carry its way all the way over to take over Orlando. Everyone's just sort of like getting their shit in and then getting knocked the hell out, and all sorts of insanity occurs. And just then, yeah, out of nowhere, a woman comes running down the ramp and attacks Nikki Cross, the crowd chanting Ruby. I did a little research. Apparently this is Ruby Riott, who is formerly Heidi Lovelace, and apparently she's got some sort of qualm with Nikki Cross. She's an interesting looking girl, I'll say that much. Very skinny, smaller girl, nose piercing, very short haircut, tattoos, interesting looking. I don't hate it, I'm just saying it's a good look, but it's a weird look for a baby face running in to save the day. Like, I just don't expect that necessarily. But having said that, she is going after Nikki Cross, so she's got to be her own particular brand of crazy. And we'll see where that goes. But it's cool to see another woman added in here. Maybe she'll be making her debut at TakeOver Orlando as well. Or perhaps the TakeOver Orlando hangover. You know, that little before the show kind of deal that ends up getting played next week as the NXT Hangover Edition, as I always like to call it. And so now we have a 4-on-4 thing going on. So maybe we're getting an 8-on-8 at TakeOver between all these people. And I guess that's cool. I don't know. I feel like all of these people deserve such better things. Like Sanity and Eric Young picking on any one of these three guys and having a lengthy feud where ultimately one of these three guys goes over is way better than all of the random guys in the locker room getting together and trying to fight off Sanity because we're not going to allow this kind of behavior at our beloved NXT. Like, okay, come on, guys. Like, first of all, this is wrestling. Second of all, you've now ruined Sanity. If all of a sudden everyone and anyone is willing to just team up to stop Sanity, like, Sanity can't be really what it needs to be. The thing is that they're a large group that's all together, and when you can just throw Ty Dillinger, No Way Jose, and Roderick Strong into a tag team together, and all of a sudden they're as good, that weakens Sanity. It just doesn't look good for them that you could just throw random three group guys together. Or the fact that, you know, you've ruined heel factions in general. If now, like, you know, it took a while before WCW had to go to, like, a formal, like, let's get a team WCW together to try to combat the NWO. It was the NWO, like, spread like a wildfire through the roster before they really started trying to formulate something concrete. Like, it was pretty bad. It got out of hand pretty quickly. Because it wasn't so much about WCW versus the NWO as much as it was about, like, the NWO core guys being dicks and everyone else being pissed at them. And then once they spread to the point to where they had half the roster, then it became about, like, the brands versus one another. And, you know, you got to let sanity get to that point before you start just letting every babyface team up together for no reason and being good at it on top of it. It's silly. It's not good booking, and it's not a good use of any of these guys, that Roderick Strong and Eric Young and Ty Dillinger and even No Way Jose. Like, they all deserve better than this. I don't know. Team No Way Jose with Kane. I think I mentioned that at the top of the show, but somebody said that on Reddit with, Team No Way in Hell. Why the hell not? I just think that'll be funny. Mad Oddball Tag Teams. That'll probably be the name of this episode, is Mad Oddball Tag Teams. And NXT was uneventful. It is, as I said on Red Zone for Raw this week, it's the go-home to the go-home. Like, they're going to save everything big for next week. They saved the main event picture, Nakamura and Rude. Neither one of them really on this show, except for, like I said, that lengthy package. That's, you know, Asuka, no Ember Moon. Ember Moon did not show up, but Asuka did enough to do her part in this build. I hope we get a contract signing between them too next week. We should get all the contract signings. We'll have a long table. It'll look like a mess hall. And, we could just have everybody just, then almost like musical chairs, like speed dating style. Everyone can just sign contracts and interact with one another, and maybe they can be friends, maybe they can be tag team partners, something like that. I don't know. There's no real reason to have a match of any sort next week, other than that triple threat match that we're getting between one half of each of the tag teams that are going to be involved in a triple threat match at WrestleMania, which again, I like that. I like that whole thing. I think that's a good idea, but that's the only match that there's any real reason for next week. And I don't want a 40-minute contract signing, but maybe they'll surprise me. And, I guess there's always something they could do with the lower card women. Like, Liv Morgan can have a match. That's fine. It's going to be an interesting go-home episode, but it's going to be a hell of a takeover. It's been a while since we've had a stinker takeover. As a matter of fact, I can't think of a stinker takeover, but even the worst takeover is still better than a lot of shit. As far as wrestling goes, maybe in general. But that's just about it for this episode of NXT. And I do have a couple points I wanted to go home with tonight. Got all the positive juju going last week. I do have one person I'd like to speak out for. And I'm going to do that right after this. All right, so basically, I want to speak up for Heath Slater. I feel real bad for the dude. Remember when Heath Slater was the hottest free agent in all of professional wrestling? He fell asleep during the draft in the back, and everyone cracked up about it. He tagged the team with Rhino, and everyone was like, oh, good for you, Keith. You're going to get yourself some gold on SmackDown. Everybody was real happy for Heath Slater. What the fuck? Where's everybody now? Where are my Heath heads? Where are Heath's kids? What the hell happened to that? Everyone just, what, Heath, you got emancipated? Like, what the fuck? Heath Slater is hysterical and decent in the ring and charismatic and funny, and just, like, everything about Heath Slater is, like, what's great about mid-card wrestling. And yet, that tag team just went to shit. No one really cares anymore. And I think maybe Vince was, like, hoping that Rhino would win the election and that he can do something with Heath, and now he just doesn't have the heart to, like, tell Rhino he's got nothing for him other than this. But this is nothing, because the Ascension have looked better than them on SmackDown, essentially, over the last couple months. It's been the Alphas, American Alpha and the Usos, and that's really it. There's no depth on that tag team division, and they haven't really been acknowledged up until this week, as I mentioned at the top of the show. But Heath Slater should be doing all the shit James Ellsworth's doing? Like, why is Heath Slater not doing this stuff? Did he get caught, like, looking at Steph in the backs the wrong way? Like, I don't understand for the life of me why this man got snubbed, and you got a guy like James Ellsworth that just comes in out of nowhere, catches fire. Like, Heath Slater had all that same momentum going. If you had Heath Slater in main event matches on SmackDown for the WWE title, people would fucking love it. Or am I crazy? Like, how could you have liked Ellsworth and wouldn't have liked Slater? That's my thoughts on it. Essentially, I guess if my math is correct, you know, let me know. And if not, let me know on Twitter at WWPNBello. It's my hot topic for the week. This is not a segment. This is just a random thing that's been bothering me for a long time. I may have even ranted about it on a previous show, but I want to stress this point that, like, that dude deserves, like, the year that he had, the first half of the year, really, he deserves, like, that whole stretch from the draft for, like, 2 months. Like, that was great. He deserves so much better than what he got. Yeah, he's one half of the first ever SmackDown tag team titles, whatever the hell that means. They'll be merged back in a couple months. Probably. Maybe. I don't know. It's possible, though. Let's not pretend it's not. And, you know, so he deserves a lot more, and he could have been doing the James Ellsworth thing. He could be winning the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. He could be Santino Marella, who had a great spot for a long time, and he was really funny. And, like, I would buy some sort of goofy Heath merch if he had some sort of, like, you know, something like the Cobra or Mr. Socko. Not necessarily that particular style merch, but if he can work something in there, like, I would be all about it. Heath's got kids, man. Everyone liked that. And Brock Lesnar doesn't give a shit about his kids, and everyone loved that. Like, give me more Heath Slater. I didn't ever understood the fascination with Ellsworth, but as far as I'm concerned, Ellsworth is, for all the reasons everyone likes Ellsworth, like, you still have that in Slater, except he can, like, actually work, and he can cut a promo, and I guess Ellsworth's not too bad in the promo aspect of things. He's just, like, weird and goobery, and I guess, like, that's the appeal. But Heath Slater's weird and goobery, but he's also, like, a good athlete and a good performer and a good wrestler. And he got to WWE's level doing the James Ellsworth sort of thing. And he's already there. Like, James Ellsworth just sort of hopped in and they were like, oh, we like this. And Heath's like, dude, I'm over here. This is what I do. And Santino Marella is laughing somewhere. The Milan Miracle. That was just the weirdest thing. Yeah, so that's it. I wanted to stand up for Heath Slater because he's completely lost in the shuffle they have had. Yeah, I haven't even seen him on SmackDown in weeks, and I used to look forward to Heath Slater segments every week on Raw and on SmackDown when he didn't even have... He was the most over guy on the roster after the draft for at least 6 weeks until he found a home on SmackDown Live, which sort of unfortunate. I wish he was still a free agent, weirdly enough. Maybe he showed up in NXT. That kind of stuff would be awesome. Let Heath Slater go to Ring of Honor. Like, why the fuck not? What's that going to hurt? Let Heath Slater go to New Japan. You guys are all up the butt with them. By you guys, I mean WWE. That's like the only promotion they acknowledge by name. And Heath Slater's the man. Deserves better. I probably ranted far too long about that. But hey, if I'm wrong, or if you guys disagree, you know how to tell me. The last thing I wanted to talk about is, this should be fairly brief, is the ideal ending to WrestleMania. We're going to get the Brock Lesnar and Goldberg match, probably in the main event. Just makes the most sense. But as far as the Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt situation is concerned, with the new twist in the storyline, in that Bray Wyatt is now almost, I guess we're led to believe, to be believed that he's more powerful. Like, I don't understand how any of this works to begin with. I don't understand why a dead body gave him power, how burning the dead body would give him power, and how rubbing the ashes on him, like, would make him even more powerful. I don't know. I never knew from the get-go with this whole storyline, as you know, if you've been following my comments on this, but it's sort of nutty. And I'm not the biggest Bray Wyatt fan in the world. I don't dislike his work. I appreciate it. He's just not my favorite. He's not one of my top, you know, 50 favorites even. So, but I do appreciate the character. And I, 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 I give a lot of that to the fact that WWE hasn't booked him well, and that if he was more Undertaker and less Kamala, no, maybe, yeah, I don't know, about more or less Papa Shango, I guess. It's just weird. He needs to be darker and more mystical and more powerful, and maybe now he's there. And weirdly enough, a very bright young man wrote an article on a website called thewwpn.com. That bright young man's name happens to be the Andrew Bellow, and I wrote this article months ago about how Bray Wyatt needs to expand his powers. Now, we saw that he can, like, claim powers in the Taker and Kane feud that he had going, I guess, a year and a half, 2 years ago. So that's great. We need to, if he's going to be this mystical being, this paranormal gimmick, you need to have an understanding of what his powers are, and his powers need to be great. Like, he can't just be like having okay paranormal powers. Like, no, you got, if you're going to take that leap, take the leap. Like, have him be able to do mind control, which is what I think should be the next stage of his powers, is essentially he has the ability to just control somebody. He maybe perhaps needs to pin them or defeat them or sacrifice something or capture them or whatever the case may be, that he needs to do something in order to have control over a given person. And maybe he can have Randy Orton do his bidding for several months on end, and like he's been doing. I guess it didn't work out the way that he thought, but that's essentially what we were being led to believe. And I think we should get more of that. And that the ending of WrestleMania, or that particular match, should be the bell rings, the match starts, and Randy Orton lays down, and Bray Wyatt pins him 1-2-3, and Randy Orton is back under Bray Wyatt's spell, and he fucked up real bad by doing what he did. And Bray Wyatt sort of knew the whole time. And Luke Harper, as much as I want to see him involved in all this, I don't think it needs it. Just go with Wyatt winning this clean as a whistle in 3 seconds. And Randy Orton just laying down and being Bray Wyatt's slave until somebody can free him, essentially. I mean, that's what we're talking about here, is mind control. He's like, he can just make you do his bidding. He's the son of Satan, or the power controller of the daughter of Satan, whatever he wants to tell you. He's talking about Satan. He's spitting that Satan game on SmackDown, and for some reason WWE hasn't, the stock hasn't plummeted, and they haven't had to close up shop, and Mothers Against WWE, if that is such a real thing and not just a Twitter gimmick, they didn't freak out about it. It's, you could push the envelope every so often, and Bray Wyatt's doing that, and the scarier and more realistic and unchained he can be in what he says, the better. But at the end of the day, the one thing that comes down to it, Bray Wyatt, is he needs to make sense. He cannot just ramble on for 7 minutes having all these interwoven, lexicon, muscle flexing kind of moments where he just shows off his vocabulary about how spectacular of a promo writer he is. But at the end of the day, the promos don't have anything to them. He needs to prove his point, make the metaphor overarching and have it be one giant double entendre in a way. That he, the way that he could speak, and if he can actually drive a point home with any of his promos, they're wonderful. But the ones that it's just like, well, it's 5 weeks in between a pay-per-view, and this is week 3, and I just got to go out there and cut a 2-minute promo, and he just rambles, oh, man, I got to do this thing, man, and I'm out here, and I'm rambling, man, and I was born around. And he just, he goes on nonsensically dancing in circles about nothing. And at the end of the day, if he is so omnipotent and omniscient and spooky, why? Tell me why. Bray, why it? Like, just tell me. Tell me why. Tell me why you're doing this. Why are you creeping on Randy Orton? Randy Orton's a 12-time champion, and I want to use him as a pawn in my ultimate scheme to conquer the WWE. It's fucking great. Awesome, Bray. Go do that. Like, go ahead and do it. That'd be great. All right, man. So, I do the impressions. I don't know how good or horrible they may be. I'm sorry, folks. But this has been this week's episode of the Next Level Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, The Andrew Bello. This is the Wrestling World Podcast Network. You could find us on thewwpn.com. You could find me on Twitter at WWPNBello. And you can go to YouTube and type in Wrestling World Podcast Network up at the search bar. And that's always that's going to lead you to some awesome stuff as well. A lot of new stuff coming out on the YouTube page in preparation for WrestleMania, as well as on the other side of WrestleMania. We're going to have some regularly scheduled programming. We're going to have some revamps of current products, including 205 Live in 5. I'm going to be doing a complete new revamp of that and essentially doing a top 5 power ranking every week. So a little longer than 5 minutes, but at the end of the day, it'll still cover everything that's going on in the cruiserweights. And I do like that, man. I'm really a big fan of all the cruiserweights as individuals. So to get to be able to talk to them, not to talk to them, that'd be cool. To get the ability to shine a light on those particular talents and what they can do and why they should have been here in the first place, then they probably shouldn't even be pigeonholed into this cruiserweight division. But if the cruiserweight division could be done right, it can mean a lot of really awesome things for a lot of really awesome people. And as I said on a previous show, I'm sure, and as I've probably said that a million times tonight, I'm on too many shows, guys, but I love talking about wrestling, and I'm happy you guys are listening to it. But they need to be more Conor McGregor than Rey Mysterio in that, like, a cruiserweight rivalry. For instance, Neville and Austin Aries, if this was, like, I don't know, random pay-per-view. I guess Bad Blood is coming up on SmackDown, is going to be the next pay-per-view for them after WrestleMania. Bad Blood could be headlined by a match between Austin Aries and Neville. Not necessarily because of the brands or whatever, but if they had like a dud heavyweight title match going on, Bray Wyatt versus Baron Corbin, and that just happened to be the angle that they worked, Bray Wyatt versus, I don't know, there's no faces on SmackDown. Bray Wyatt versus Ty Dillinger, who comes in, and that's like, obviously that's not selling a lot of pay-per-views or getting a lot of subscriptions on the network, but you could really push an Austin Aries versus Neville match and make that feel like a big deal. And despite the fact that it's just the cruiserweight division, like, it's still to the at the best of what they do, like, emphasize it in the same way that UFC does. Like, these are the best fighters in the world. In order to make it fair, we have to divide these wrestlers up by size. To have Rich Swann in a match with Brock Lesnar, as spectacularly entertaining as that would probably be, it's, you know, only in the world of wrestling does that work. And I guess that's maybe pushing the boundaries of kayfabe a little bit, but to say, like, that Rich Swann is less of a wrestler than, you know, Rich Swann is a better wrestler rather than a significant portion of men much larger than he. So he can, you know, he should have a spot and a forum to show off what he can do in a fair fight. And sometimes wrestling isn't a fair fight, but in a fair fight in the cruiserweight division, you get like really awesome athleticism, because it's about showing off what you can do at the end of the day. In addition to being what you can do, it's like what we can do, what the 205 and under professional wrestlers of the world can bring to the table. And they do. And man, I love the cruiserweights, like all of them, even the guys I wasn't particularly familiar with coming in. I'm huge fans of Gulak and Dar and Ali, and there isn't a guy on that roster that I don't like, I don't think. Daivari, he's even good. I'll take it. Like, he's a moderate, completely serviceable heel. But now this has turned into a 205 Live conversation, and I've rambled on for too long. About the plugs, you got a little bonus action. And one last time, at WWPNBello, thewwpn.com. And follow us at Wrestle World Cast without the O. And that's about it, guys. Peace. At her feet was a footloose man.
you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, well, you might find.